Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Riddle of the Gods by Eric Schumacher, narrated by Gildert Jackson. Part 1. At the same moment rose without from the contending crowd a shout, a mingled sound of triumph and of wailing. The Saga of King Olaf, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. 1. Vagria, Fall, A.D. 976. Something was wrong. The morning's rain had dwindled to a light drizzle, and we could see the Danish raiding party clearly now. There were about 20 of the bastards, some armoured, some not. Behind them in the tree line huddled the captives and livestock they had taken from nearby steadings. They were a common sight, those Danes. Though we had defeated an army of them several summers before, Danes still came oft from their lands to take what they could from the small Slavic kingdom called Vagria, on their southern border, the kingdom we protected. Normally, Dane raiders such as these would scatter like rats when they saw a force of our strength gather against them, for we were nearly 30 men, all mounted, armoured, and well-weaponed. But this group stood fast, and I liked it not. Mind you, I had no issue bloodying my blade with Dane marauders, but this day was different. This day we escorted Vagria's pregnant princess, Geira, to her home in Plune. She who was betrothed to my friend and charge, Olaf, and carried within her womb their child. I scratched at my black beard, my eyes scanning the trees for other signs of trouble, but I could find none. "Why do the fools stand against us?" I wondered aloud. Olaf's sky-blue eye winked at me. "Because they are fools, Torgil." "Aye," added a burly yellow-haired warrior. "The bastards will feel our steel for their mistake. We were right to follow them here, eh, Olaf?" He grinned at our lord. I scowled at the arse-licker, whose name was Berse. Summers ago, when we lived in Gardariki, far to the east, he had been Olaf's second in command, but he had lost that position to me. Ever since, he had been a boot-licking fool whom I trusted as far as I could spit into a strong wind, and I was not timid to show it. It had been his witless idea to follow the Danes this day, his and that of the man called Oscar, who rode with Prince Olaf. A Zaid man, they called him, a man who could divine the will of the gods through the bird bones he cast on the ground. Olaf had met Oscar the summer before and shown a deep appreciation for his craft, if you could call it that. Anything to give him an advantage over his enemies. It seemed to me that much of what Oscar divined could be reasoned, but then who was I to say? The gods never spoke to me. Still, Olaf liked the man.
The gods foresaw this, did they not, Oscar?
The raven bone in Olaf's amber beard jiggled as he turned to the strange man. It was because of that bone that Olaf had earned his byname of Crowbone. Crows, of course, were the lesser cousins of Odin's mighty ravens, so the name was partly in jest, which was why we did not call Olaf Crowbone to his face. Oscar looked the part of a man who spoke to the gods. He wore a simple leather tunic and breeks, a necklace and wristbands, fashioned from raven feathers, and circular earrings of wood, and he was totally lacking in hair. It was not just missing from his head, it was missing from his body. He had no brows, no eyelashes, no hair on his arms or chest. It was as if the gods had forgotten that detail when bringing him to life. I knew not if the gods had foreseen this moment, but I did know that I was concerned. "Lord," I growled at Olaf. My steed pranced restlessly beneath me, sensing my agitation. "The princess is pregnant. If something happens..."
"I can handle myself," interjected the princess, who tilted awkwardly in her saddle with her bulging belly.
The coldness dripped from her response like the rain from the rim of my helmet. "Suit yourself," I muttered, then spat in the mud beside my horse. Put plainly, my relationship with Olaf's spouse was as brittle as spring ice. I respected her well enough. She had strength and courage, and a mind to match. But still I harbored a simmering resentment toward her for the loss of my own wife, Turit. You see, I had sworn an oath to protect Olaf, and to not leave his side. The plan, when we left Gardariki, had been to raid and then return to the north, where my wife waited for me with our child. But Geira's betrothal to Olaf had kept me here in her kingdom much longer than expected. Thinking my absence meant my death, Turid turned to the affections of my friend and former lord Sigurd, whom she married. I suppose it had been the prudent thing to do. After all, Turid had a newborn and needed support, and I had not been there to give it. None of that would have happened, of course, had Geira not married Olaf, and so I blamed her for my misfortune. She reacted to that resentment with a coldness that was as predictable as it was unpreventable. And so our relationship became a bitter truce of sorts, with Olaf as our buffer. Truth be told, I cared not a whit if a Danish spear took her life, but I did fear for her unborn child, which was Olaf's child.
"Well said, my lady,"
Olaf declared with a flourish, then smiled that mischievous smile of his. By now we all knew the look. He was not smiling at us, or at me, or even at his spouse. The bastard was grinning at danger, spitting in its face. I hated that look. Since we were lads, Olaf's disregard for peril had led to more misadventures than I cared to count, and that grating smile had preceded them all.
"Remain here, Oscar,"
Olaf called over his shoulder as he prodded his mount into motion. I spat again to display my disgust.
"Be of glad spirits, Torgil,"
my friend Svein called to me as he kicked his mount forward to follow Olaf.
"You could be fighting with one hand instead of two."
He waved his wooden right hand at me. Svein was a master with wood and had carved the prosthetic himself, after losing his real hand to the swipe of a sword. I sighed and joined the line of horses that Olaf was forming. Then I adjusted my helmet and the shield upon my back. Off to my right, the barrel-chested Ulf belched and a few men laughed. Others joked or made bets about the number of Danes they would kill that day. We did these things because, to a man, we were veterans. Olaf's hirt, or, as he liked to call us, his wolves. We had oft faced death, and did not fear a skirmish such as this. Only our mounts seemed agitated as they pranced and snorted beneath us. Perchance they were more keen to the impending strife than we were. Olaf gazed down the lines to either side of him, then pointed his blade at the Danes, and roared. His men echoed his cry, and as one we kicked our steeds into action. Mud flew from the hooves of our mounts as we charged down the gentle slope. Birds took flight at the thunder of our cries.
That alone would have frozen the hearts of most men. But the Danes did not run. Instead, they raised their shields and tightened their ranks, and as their spear tips dropped to meet us, they let loose with a defiant call. It was too late for vigilance, too late for cowardice. We were all committed to the bloodshed now, and would see it through, no matter the outcome. As we drew closer to our enemy, my reservations gave way to a thrill that was uncontainable, a thrill that shot through my veins and from my mouth in a loud howl, a thrill from which I could not retreat until my blade had slaked itself and the threat of death was defeated. "Archers!" Dragomir's hollered words registered in my mind. Though we were well armored, our shields were on our backs, and we were vulnerable, yet we could not turn now. No true warrior could die with an arrow in his back. Besides, we were too near the enemy, so we charged into the storm that was about to be unleashed. An arrow streaked past my head. I flinched and lowered myself in my saddle. A man to my right tumbled over the back of his steed. Another warrior cried out in pain. The Danes on the field roared all the louder. I shouted my own curses and raised my blade to strike. And that was when Geira shrieked. An arrow was protruding from her thigh, just below the reach of her byrnie. At the same moment, a bare-headed beast of a man rose and tossed his spear. The weapon struck Geira's mount fully in its chest. As the animal plunged snout down into the mud, Geira launched from her saddle and rolled toward the enemy. A man advanced to finish her, but Olaf cleaved his head from his body before the Dane could bring his weapon down. Another Dane came to slay Olaf as he leaped from his saddle to save his wife. I charged at him to save my friend. He saw me at the last moment and turned his blade to protect his head from my strike. Mounted as I was, the momentum of my sword drove the man to his knees. I tried to use my horse's hooves to pummel him, but he scurried away. To my right and left, our warriors crashed into the Danes. Spears poked upward, horses whinnied and kicked at the sky, blades swung down. Men screamed and collapsed or jumped from their saddles and lunged into the enemy's lines. I spun the shield from my back and galloped to Olaf. As my friend knelt beside his battered wife, I dismounted and held my shield to his back. Olaf heaved Geira into the arms of Svein, who had remained on his mount. "Get her to Plune!" Olaf shouted. Svein hauled her onto his saddle, lowered his body over her, and raced back across the field. Arrows streaked past him, though none found their mark. I turned to face the Danes and the first man in my vision. He was more lad than man, really. Wounded as he was, he could barely hold his spear. But my bloodlust was upon me, and so too was my anger. I stepped inside his feeble spear thrust and hewed into his young frame. The man behind him saw his friend's body severed and lost all nerve. He scurried for the trees, and I gave no chase. Instead, I charged the archers who were still targeting our men. One loosed an arrow at me, which I blocked with my shield. The man turned to run, but I opened a deep gash in his back, then thrust my sword into the horse's spine as he hit the muddy turf. I spun quickly to check for other Danes, but found none. If they were not already dead, they were retreating into the shadows of the forest. I moved to the captives, but I need not have. They all had been tied to trees, and now leaned lifelessly against their ropes, their throats slit, their soiled hair falling about their faces. And as their blood drained from their wounds,
so also did the vigour from my veins. In its place rose a vast weariness, a sickness really for the loss of innocence. It was one thing to kill a person threatening you with a blade. It was another to kill a man, woman, or child who posed no threat. I had seen enough of it to fill a thousand lifetimes. I turned to Bersa. We will bury the Vagrians here and take our wounded or slain back to Plune. Leave the Danes for the wolves. And because I could not resist, I added, let us hope she and the child survive this fool's errand. 2. The rain had returned by the time we reached Plune. Heads downturned and bodies steaming, our weary steeds clattered across the wood-planked bridge toward the fortress, which sat on a small island in a large lake not far from Saxland's northeastern border. High timbered walls encircled the entire island, which one could only reach by boat or the long narrow bridge we now crossed in single file. On the shore behind us was a small Slavic settlement, which was also called Plune. In times of trouble, the people of the settlement could retreat to the island and find refuge behind its palisade. It was a fascinating place, and had everything we might need: a royal hall, barracks, a smithy, storage and food sheds, a barn, servants' quarters. But, despite that, I liked it not. Though it was protected by high walls, I felt exposed in that island outpost, and cramped within its confines. The Borg's guards and citizens bowed as we appeared in the puddled courtyard, but Olaf did not notice. His mind, I knew, had paced ahead of him. He kicked his mount into a trot and climbed from the beast's back before it had stopped. Then he ran the last few steps to his hall and pushed past the young maidservant who was exiting. Had he stopped to greet her, he might have seen in her hand a bucket filled with bloody water. I glanced at Svein, who stood on the hall's porch, his eyes on his feet. I then looked at Bersa, who rode beside me. His stony face studied the scene from beneath his sodden shags of hair. He then glanced at me, and in that gaze I saw my own fears, which angered me all the more. It need not have been like this. "See to the horses, Bersa, and the men," I snarled at him. I turned to the lass who had just stepped into the muddy yard. "What word of Princess Geira?" The young woman gazed up at me, shook her head, then hauled her bucket away. Its rocking splashed crimson waves upon the puddled courtyard. I climbed from my mount and strode into Olaf's hall, passing Svein without a word. What I found in the gloom of that place gave me pause. Outside the door to Olaf's bedchamber, behind the veil of wavering firelight and floating dust mites, knelt three tonsured monks, their heads bowed, their murmured prayers blending with the footfalls of busy maidservants and the crackle of the hearth-fire. When the Danes invaded Saxland and Vagria 2 summers before, Prince Burislav and his Vagrians, with Olaf's aid, of course, helped the Saxons drive the Danes back beyond the Danavirki. This was their reward for that alliance: more Christian monks in Burislav's realm, and more pressure on the pagan prince and his people to convert. To their credit, the Slavic prince and his daughters clung staunchly to their faith, and, when Saxon nobles weren't present, barred the monks from entering their royal halls, which was why I found the sight of them now so odd. I grabbed a passing woman by the arm and inquired again about the princess. Startled by my advance, the woman responded in stuttered fits.
"Not so well, Lord. Her body is broken. We removed the arrow, but she continues to lose blood and strength. She is fighting, but...
The woman's eyes teared, and she dropped her head. I let go of the woman's arm, and she fled. Then I wiped my face and sat on a nearby bench, my back to the warm hearth fire and elbows upon my knees. I let my thoughts float to Olaf. He was no stranger to women, large, small, fat, thin, ugly, attractive. He lay with them all. They were a conquest for him, and he had always enjoyed the challenge they presented. But Geira was different. He loved her. Since his betrothal to her several winters before, he'd had eyes only for her. She was his match in wit and intellect and speech, and as bold as her father on the field. Too bold. Now she was fighting a different sort of battle, one for her life and that of her child. And I worried for her loss and its effect on my friend. I thought to go to Olaf to console him and quickly cast the thought aside. He would want to be alone with her. Besides, words did not come easily to me, and I feared saying the wrong thing. But even if I could find the right platitudes for the moment, I knew my words would be hollow, and so too would Olaf. My friend knew of my harbored resentment and would see through my lies of concern. I then thought to go to the men, but they would require news, and I had none to offer. And so I did the only thing I could think to do. I sat and waited. I thought to pray, but I knew the gods could do little to change the weave of someone's fate. Those callous bitches we called the Norns wove our destinies at our birth, and there was nothing a person or god could do to stay their hands. If they had already woven Geira's death for here and now, she was doomed. Olaf emerged from the chamber, interrupting my reflections, but rather than move to the hearth, as I thought he might, he stopped to gaze upon the monks. So lost were they in prayer, they did not notice him until he grabbed two of them by their cowls and hauled them to their feet. "Enough of your curses! Out!" he roared as he lifted each into the air and walked them to the hall's door. "Unhand us!" yelled one of the monks. "What is this?" called the third monk, who had risen to his feet and scurried after Olaf. "We pray for the princess. Can you not see?" "And now you will pray elsewhere," called Olaf over his shoulder. "All of you!" He nudged open the door with his boot and tossed the befuddled monks out onto the porch. "The prince will hear about this indignity," growled the third monk. "You can be sure of it." Olaf bared his teeth in what might have been a smile were his eyes not so menacing. "Out, or I will cut off your balls and feed them to the hounds." His hand moved to the hilt of his sayax. The protesting monk blanched and clamped his lips shut, then ushered his companions from the doorway. Olaf slammed the door after them, then came over to me and sank his long limbs onto the bench. It creaked in protest under his muscular frame. "Bastards!" he spat. "How fares Geira?" I asked, abruptly yet softly. I knew the answer, of course, but I wanted to shift his mind back to what mattered most. The lines etched on his face spoke more clearly than any words he might have uttered. "I am sorry," I said. The words came easier than I thought they might. He turned away. "Mayhap, now that the monks are gone, we will see some improvement in Geira." Olaf swiveled his head to look at me, and in his blue eyes I saw the grief that had settled upon him. "Mayhap," he said distantly, then turned his eyes back to the dark hall and rubbed his face. "Mayhap." Through the afternoon and into the night we waited. Maidservants came and went. Some brought us food and ale. Others stole glances at their sorry lord as they hauled their buckets and rags hither and yon. Olaf sat, then paced, then sat again. I added wood to the hearth and coaxed it into a flame. I whittled, and for a time I closed my eyes to nap. Anything to keep my eyes off my friend and his woman. The other warriors of Olaf's hirt wisely stayed away. At some point I awoke to the sound of whispers. The hall was dark, save for the orange glow of the hearth. My eyes travelled the shadows to the door of the bedchamber, where Olaf conversed with Brana, the head of Geira's maidservants. I saw her shaking her head. I saw Olaf's own head bow. Brana laid a brief but gentle hand on Olaf's arm, then retreated back into the room. Olaf shuffled to a nearby bench and collapsed. He bent his head and buried his face in his hands, his hulking form shaking in silent sobs. My own eyes filled with tears, not because the loss of Geira touched me that deeply, it did not, but because my friend's grief tore at my own emotions. And so, together and in silence, we cried. And then, suddenly, he rose and stormed from the hall, moving with a purpose that bespoke of violence. "Olaf!" I called to him, but he either did not hear me or chose not to react. As the hall's door slammed behind him, my mind flew to the monks, and I instantly understood. They had cursed Geira with their prayers, and now the sorry bastards would feel the pain of Olaf's wrath. I thought to give Olaf chase, but restrained myself. What did I care if he hurt the Christian fools? But I was wrong. We found Oscar hanging from the walls of Pluna in the morning, a raven pecking at the soft tissue of his eyes. As I stared at his dangling body, I wondered if he had missed the signs of his own demise as horribly as he had missed Geira's. I turned to Bersa, who stood to my right, gawking at the corpse. "It's a good thing you don't cast lots." I spat in the mud and stalked away. 3. Prince Borislav and his family buried Geira in a grove of old oak trees that stood to the south of Vagria's main town, Starigard. The town's citizens often gathered beneath these ancient limbs, carving messages in the bark or leaving tokens at the roots as offerings to the Slavic gods. Under the mantle of one particularly large oak lay the graves of Borislav's grandsires and sires, and now, sadly, it shielded the remains of his eldest daughter. The funeral was a sombre affair, made all the gloomier by the incessant rain that pattered on the leaves overhead. Though the oaks protected us somewhat from the downpour, thick drops still tapped upon our hooded heads and collected in puddles around our boots. It was not all bad, though. It did mute the howls of the Slavic holy man who prayed over Geira's grave, though it did little to erase from my sight the congregation of Christian priests huddled nearby. In addition to his governors and supporters, the gathering included those of Prince Borislav's kin, who yet lived in Vagria. There were not many. The prince's two remaining daughters now lived with their husbands, Jarl Sigvald of Jomsborg and King Harald of Denmark, respectively, the former to win the support of the notorious warriors, and the latter as an arrangement to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?